The Heaven Field, a novel by I.G. Hume, read by the author. Episode 18, A Cry for Help.
So, where are we going?
Asked Thomas between gasps, out of breath from walking with the unaccustomed bulk of his environment suit.
You'll see for yourself when we get to the top of this rise, said Grace.
Thomas was amazed at the speed with which she walked, and the energy she had for someone who smoked such endless amounts of cigarettes. Thomas wondered idly how she would last out in the field. He half expected to see her helmet filling up with smoke.
Phew, made it,
she gasped, as Thomas caught up with her at the crest of a large bluff of rock.
Gary, did you say you'd started in that section?
She asked, waving her hand beyond. Thomas followed her arm, and was shocked to see a tumble of ruined buildings in the valley below. There was something peculiar about the architecture, as if the houses hadn't so much been built as grown out of one another. There was probably between 50 to 70 structures, all crammed one on top of the other. Thomas spied an old wood-walled house, with a post-war semi-detached jutting out of one side. The join between the two was twisted and contorted, where brick and tile seemed to melt into beam and thatch. An ugly block of flats sprouted out from an old stone farmhouse in the centre of the bizarre village.
Weird,
muttered Nix at Thomas's side, then followed the line of soldiers down into the small valley.
Have you ever seen anything like it?
Grinned Grace. Thomas didn't reply. The twisted architecture made him feel nervous. The buildings all had an unkempt, grubby feel about them.
Does anyone live there?
He whispered at last.
Well, we haven't met them yet if they do, said Grace. Don't worry. We've been all over a good deal of this site. There's nothing to worry about. Come on, let's catch the others up.
She took his arm to lead him down the rocky path towards a clutter of buildings. Thomas didn't move. A huge wave of anxiety fell over him, and it was all he could do to prevent himself from vomiting.
Thomas, are you all right?
Asked Grace, still holding his arm. Thomas couldn't reply. He swayed a little and would have fallen, but Sanders caught him from behind, lowering him gently to the floor.
Thomas, what is it?
Shouted Grace again, but he still couldn't answer. He looked down into the valley below. There seemed a peculiar darkness gathered around the buildings, which appeared to lean over the distant figures of the rest of the team. They were at the outskirts of the village now, a thin line of dark-suited soldiers, with Nix and Starling's orange environment gear standing out sharply against them. They had stopped and were looking back in curiosity towards the crest of the hill, where the three of them remained.
Is everything okay?
Thomas heard Starling's voice in his ear.
I think so, he gasped. I just felt a little sick, sort of, then.
Do you want to go back to base camp? Asked Grace, looking down at him in concern.
No, I think I'm okay, he stuttered. You go on, Gary, we'll catch you up, said Grace,
and they watched as the line of troops disappeared between the buildings.
Just catch your breath a minute, then we can follow them down,
she said, sitting herself on a rock next to Thomas.
What do you think it was?
I don't know, he muttered, regaining his composure.
It was strange, all the buildings. They looked sort of funny, like they were alive or something. Just panicked me, I guess.
He smiled nervously in way of an apology.
Don't worry, Thomas. This whole place is a bit funny, laughed Grace. But what a discovery! Structures outside of our everyday world. Perhaps even other life forms, other civilizations evolving alongside our own.
Thomas looked up sharply at her. She was grinning in excitement, but Thomas felt more anxious than ever. She caught his look of dismay.
Oh, it's all right, Thomas. I'm just rambling. I think we're quite safe here.
Her voice died away as she cocked her head on one side as if listening intently. Soon Thomas could hear it too. A low rumble, like the distant roar of the sea. They stood up and gazed about to locate the source of the noise.
There,
called Thomas, pointing back in the direction of the base camp. Low over the horizon were four dark specks, hanging in the air. They watched them approaching, mesmerized. They seemed to be travelling at a terrific speed.
They're planes of some sort, stammered Thomas, shielding his eyes against the sun.
The objects flew low over the ground, following the contours of the valley, coming straight towards them. A dark plume of dust flew up from behind them.
Get to the buildings, quickly,
yelled Sanders urgently, manhandling Grace and Thomas over the crest of the hill.
Adams, get your men ready. We've got four unidentified aircraft approaching.
They stumbled down the rocky path as quickly as they could, slipping and sliding over the dusty stones. Soon, they were nearing the first street, a dark alleyway between two high buildings in some state of dilapidation. Thomas saw the rest of the team taking cover, huddling down at the far end of the alley. They could all hear the roar of the approaching aircraft now, a rising wave of panic behind them. Suddenly they cleared the crest of the hill with a low boom and roared overhead. Thomas was thrown to the ground by a blast of hot air. He looked up in time to see a dark, squat aircraft screech above him. It was an ugly machine that didn't look as if it should fly, and was covered in a familiar patina of red dust and corrosion. It flew so low that as it banked over the buildings, Thomas could make out the pilots in the cockpit. Another craft overshot them, and the roar of the engines and scream of the turbines was deafening. Thomas felt himself pulled to his feet again. "Come on!" yelled Sanders. They made it to within yards of the alley, when there was a terrific bang like a sonic boom. A huge dust cloud went up in front of them, for an instant obscuring their vision. When they looked again, the alley was filled with dark figures. Thomas gasped in fear. They wore the same suits as the ones who had attacked him in the concourse. There must have been nearly 20 of them, and the instant they approached, they opened fire with their compass and weapons. Most of them engaged with the security troops at the far end of the alley, and a firefight commenced. But as Thomas watched in horror, two of the nightmarish figures turned and levelled their weapons towards him. Two searing blasts of light tore past him, as Sanders grabbed both Grace and Thomas, pulling them towards the shelter of the nearest building. A dark shadow fell over them as one of the aircraft hovered unsteadily above, the blast of the exhaust almost knocking them off their feet. They stumbled to the wall of the building, out of the line of sight of the two soldiers for the moment.
"Quick, in here!"
shouted Sanders, knocking the glass out of a low window. The big man picked Thomas up by the waist and hurled him over the windowsill. He crashed to the floor in darkness, amid rubble and broken glass. As he scrambled to his knees, Grace fell heavily on top of him, knocking the wind from his lungs. They scrambled across the dark room towards an open doorway, then stopped in horror as they became aware of their surroundings. The room was furnished with a low sofa, chairs, television, and a coffee table. As their eyes grew accustomed to the darkness, they realized that there was a figure sitting on the sofa. Thomas glanced at him in horror. At first he thought the man was dead, but then noticed that the eyes were following him. He was as still as a statue, as if frozen in time, his head held in his hands as if caught in a moment of despair. Dust and debris covered his grey, naked body, and his eyes watched helplessly as a small black creature scuttled out of his nose and across his cheek, disappearing into his filthy hair.
"What are you waiting for? Go!"
screamed Sanders from the window. He was trying to squeeze through, but his size and the extra bulk of his armoured suit prevented him. He cursed and looked back through the window. Thomas and Grace stood paralysed, not knowing what to do, glancing in horror between Sanders and the strange, hideous figure on the sofa.
"Go!"
he screamed again, and jumped back down from the window, realising he couldn't make it through. The wall exploded inwards in a hail of rubble and dust, knocking both Grace and Thomas to the floor.
"Jonah!"
screamed Grace in despair, but the room was filled with dust and they couldn't see anything in the chaos. Thomas stumbled to his feet and made for the door, trying to drag Grace with him.
"But we can't leave him!" she shrieked, as he pulled her through the doorway. "Jonah!"
she exclaimed, as a dark silhouette appeared through a hole where the wall had stood.
"Thank God you're safe!"
The figure turned towards them, trying to locate them in the dust and gloom.
"It's not him!"
whispered Thomas in fear, and dragged Grace down a corridor leading off the room as another explosion tore out the ceiling above where they had just stood. Thomas pulled Grace, coughing and sobbing, down the dingy corridor. He spied daylight ahead, and nervously peered outside through an open doorway. They were in another alleyway. Behind the buildings, Thomas could hear the dull retorts of weapons and the low boom of explosions. He realised the open channel was still activated in his earpiece, and he could hear the shouts and shrieks of the rest of the team. He heard a sound of movement behind him, at the far end of the corridor. He took a deep breath and led Grace out of the doorway and up the empty street, not caring where they ran to. Gary Starling looked back towards the top of the ridge, shielding his eyes from the glare of the sun with his gloved hand.
"He's sitting down now," he muttered in disbelief. "Does he think he's on a picnic or something?"
"Is everything okay?" he asked, switching to the open channel.
I think so,"
he heard the distorted gasp of Thomas Sullivan.
"I just felt a... little sick, sort of, then.
Now, you don't want to be puking inside your helmet with 3 hours to go before you can take it off, Starling heard Nix joking at his side. He smiled to himself and looked at his watch. He was impatient to start examining the ruins ahead.
You go on, Gary, we'll catch you up.
Grace's voice cut into his earpiece. Starling sighed with relief.
Come on then, he said, motioning to the lead soldier. I think if we start over in that area, that looks quite interesting.
He pointed to a narrow roadway that led between a bizarre collection of buildings, which seemed to merge and thrust out of one another. He was eager to get back to examining this new find. Perhaps it would give a clue as to whether people actually lived in the field or not. So far they hadn't found any signs of life, but the duration of their expeditions, shortened as part of the new security regime, hadn't given them nearly enough time for a thorough investigation.
What do you make of it?
Asked Nix, walking along beside Starling, now bereft of his huge crate, which he had left behind at the base camp.
Do you think it's inhabited?
Starling noted that he didn't seem to speak with the same carefree tone of voice he once had. They both understood the fear each of them now harboured since their expedition with Saul Davison and Dan O'Keefe. This was their fifth journey back into the field since that incident, and they were slowly beginning to put that behind them.
Well, the other teams didn't find anything much, muttered Starling as they cautiously approached the first building.
The lead members of the squad were already halfway down the street, peering in through windows as they went.
What are we doing here?
Sighed Nix, as the team halted at the far end of the street. He fiddled nervously with the empty sample claws attached to his suit, and gazed around at the strange architecture looming over them.
What do you mean?
Asked Starling, looking up from where he was studying the intersection between a modern concrete building and a rough stone wall. It seemed as if the two materials were fused together somehow.
Well, walking around here, just what are we hoping to find? I mean, we're physicists, for Christ's sakes, and now we're studying bloody architecture under armed guard.
He shifted uncomfortably in his heavy suit.
Are you okay?
Asked Starling, looking up in concern.
I mean, really okay.
He looked long and hard into Nix's eyes.
Yeah, I'm all right, he mumbled. I just get the creeps a little easier these days.
He laughed wearily to himself and kicked at the dust with his boot.
Tell me about it, grinned Starling. But look, we've got a whole new world to explore. I'd say we've got the chance of a lifetime.
I preferred it when it was beautiful, sighed Nix, looking up at the dark windows, which seemed to stare down at them. Starling laughed and patted him on the shoulder. Stand by, team, cut in Adam's voice in their ears. The words had a sense of urgency, and immediately the squad unslung their weapons and found cover against the walls of the buildings.
They're planes of some sort,
Thomas Sullivan was saying from up on the ridge, as Starling switched back to the open channel.
Sir?
Adams, the squad leader, led him by the arm from the centre of the street, to find cover in a narrow alleyway.
What is it?
Hissed Nix from behind them.
Get to the buildings, quickly!
Sanders' urgent voice cut into their ears, distorting as he yelled.
Adams, get your men ready! We've got 4 unidentified aircraft approaching!
Adams barked orders to his squad, and they quickly spread out in alleys and doorways, facing back down the street. Starling looked on nervously. He could see the two orange specks of Grace and Sullivan as they stumbled down the rocky hill towards them, the darker, larger shape of Sanders behind them, urging them on faster.
Come on,
he muttered under his breath, willing them on. They were nearing the first of the buildings now. Starling thought he heard the distant roar of engines.
You two, stay behind me at all times, said Adam sternly.
Gary looked around to his old friend. Nix was wide-eyed and as white as a ghost.
It'll be all right,
he heard himself mutter, and clasped his hands together when he looked down and saw them shaking. Starling turned back to see that the three figures had almost made it to the first buildings. Adams readied his bulky weapon. There was a sudden explosion of sound as 4 dark objects appeared over the crest of the hill. Large, squat aircraft roared over their heads, and Starling saw Thomas and Grace fall flat on their faces at the end of the street. Gary followed the course of the craft as they banked low over the rooftops and swung around to approach them from behind.
Get down!
Screamed Adams in his ear, and he had just managed to turn and catch a glimpse back down the streets before he was roughly tugged back into the alley.
Stay there!
Shouted Adams as Starling fell in a heap on the floor. There was a loud crack like a thunderclap, and the street was filled with a shower of red dust. Gary edged out on his belly behind Adams and peered into the cloud. Dark shapes moved within it. As it cleared, he recognised the ominous suits of the soldiers who had attacked Grace and Sullivan back at Maundsworth. The instant they appeared, a volley of shots flew from them. Energy bursts screamed overhead and smashed into the walls with ferocious explosions.
"Open fire!"
screamed Adams, and his 11-man team joined in the chaos with a terrible barrage of their own.
"Well, how are you progressing?" snapped Spears, as Gutteridge approached him through the busy operations centre. Spears looked a very different person from the time Gutteridge had seen him last, in his expensive suit, sat behind an ornate desk. Now he wore a uniform of unfamiliar design, black clothing with an angel wing insignia set on a golden globe. Gutteridge thought the old man looked slightly preposterous. "We're taking heavy casualties, sir," he sighed. He still wore his dusty environment suit. There was a charred patch on his shoulder, and a dark smear of blood down his arm. "They have us pinned down at the entry point. Reports show that there are heavy concentrations of fire from points here and here." He pointed to areas on a huge flat map screen in the centre of the room. "They're well dug in, sir. We lost a lot of men trying to break out."
"I don't care about losses, Gutteridge," snapped Spears. "Do we at least hold a bridgehead into the field proper yet?"
His gaunt face was lit with a pale, sickly light from the map table below, and his eyes glistened from their sunken sockets.
"We have a small area of ground around the entry point, yes, sir," said Gutteridge. "But the enemy is employing superior technology, sir. We can't hope to hold it long. The array is working flat out at a half-hourly shifts, inserting fresh troops and removing the wounded. But once they coordinate their air power against us, we're finished, sir."
Spears slammed his fist against the table. Personnel and officers looked up in alarm, then went back to their frantic work.
"How long do they think the storm will last?" hissed Spears absently, deep in thought.
"No more than a couple of hours, sir," replied Gutteridge in his familiar monotone.
"We have only limited resources, sir. The weapons and armor production is still in its infancy. I've lost several men from failed suits already, and..."
"Yes, thank you," snapped Spears angrily.
"We need to hold that bridgehead into the field. We need to find out more about our assailants. Do we have any idea yet as to who they are?"
"Judging by their technology, I'm sure it isn't the British, sir," replied Gutteridge.
"Our attackers seem to be able to just disappear and reappear at will, coming upon us by surprise. We have little defense against them."
"But you can't rule out the British, though," hissed Spears, his tongue flicking over his dry lips.
"Our information from Maundsworth indicates that they don't have this technology yet, although they have concentrated their resources on the weapon they discovered and not the suit. I feel sure it must be a separate threat, sir. The presence of aircraft..."
"But your information could be wrong," hissed Spears in agitation. He looked feverish in the pale light. "If they made the connection to that software they recovered, they will realize it was us who faked the plane crash data. They might have already discovered our source of information. She might be working against us. They could be feeding us what they want us to think."
"I think our source is..."
"Silence!" yelled Spears.
He looked around, surprised at his own outburst. He took a deep breath and calmed himself.
"At this stage, we need to be able to compete with our enemy's technology," he said at last.
"Yes, sir," grunted Gutteridge, looking with interest at the monitor station, showing the latest wave of troops filing into the chamber. He wondered how long they would survive out in the field.
"I want you to prepare a small team, Carl," said Spears conspiratorially, peering intently at the map table. "Make an assault on their defences here as a diversion. Throw everything you've got at it."
Gutteridge raised one eyebrow, yet stayed silent.
"Your team will attempt to infiltrate through this far point here once the diversionary attack is underway. We have ascertained that at least some of their aircraft are likely to be stationed here, behind their main defences. Under cover of the storm, you are to recover one of their craft and get it back at all costs. Now, I've got you one of the best pilots around, special forces trained like yourself. If you can't take a prisoner, then you'll have to count on him to get you back. He's in the briefing room now."
Spears looked into Gutteridge's eyes, then guiltily averted his stare.
"Everything is resting on your team," he said gravely, If we can get our hands on an aircraft, then we can withdraw from the field until we have studied it and built our own. Good luck, Carl. I want you prepped by 0130.
Cuttridge walked slowly out from the operations center. His face was impossible to read. It could have been any other day at work.
Fall back!
Screamed Adams over the deafening barrage of explosions and whining flares of energy. Starling could make out the manic yells in his ears over the open channel as the squad tried desperately to defend their positions. He peered, terrified, across the street, where one of the team, pinned down by gunfire, shot wildly from behind a pile of rubble. Bursts of energy rained all around him, and as Starling watched, a shot found its target, striking the man in the shoulder. There was a terrible screaming in his earpiece as Gary attempted to cover his ears in fear.
No, please, no more,
he whispered to himself. As the yells of the soldier took on a familiar level, he had heard that pleading voice before, when he held Patty in his arms as she died. He looked back across the street in horror. The young soldier was writhing on the floor, contorting in agony and terror.
Stay there, we'll get to you,
yelled Adams powerlessly, as the injured man's screams became more frantic. Starling watched the man writhing on the floor, as bursts of energy still whined overhead. Suddenly, with a loud tearing and ripping noise, the man's screams were cut off.
What the hell?
Gasped Adams, forgetting to fire for a moment, as he stared across the street in disbelief. The soldier's suit had split open down the front, as his chest burst out from within. From the gash sprouted out a huge growth of fronds or tentacles, strange lengths of fibrous, grey, root-like shapes. They quivered in the air for a second, then a blast of an energy weapon hit them, and they fell back unmoving onto the limp shape of the soldier. Starling watched aghast, unable to react to his surroundings. A huge explosion sent debris flying next to his head.
Fall back! Fall back!
Yelled Adams. He grabbed Nix and Starling from where they crouched, terrified, and pushed them down the narrow alley.
Greer! Smith! With me!
He shouted, and the two nearest soldiers followed them at a run.
Everybody, fall back!
Yelled Adams as they ran. The alleyway opened out onto a wider street, and Starling just managed to skid to a halt as a blast of energy struck the wall in front of him. He threw himself to the floor as more soldiers in the street ahead of them opened fire. The enemy troops were crouched behind the low wall of a well in the centre of the broad street. Starling glanced behind him in terror. Any moment now, the other enemy soldiers would be following them down the alley from behind. Adams peered around the corner of the alley and pulled himself back as more shots burst around them.
Greer, Smith, he hissed. Follow that low wall to the left. Those three are stuck in the middle of the street. Get behind them. I'll cover you, okay? Go!
He shot wildly at the well as his two men ducked around the corner and disappeared off under heavy fire. Starling and Nix crouched impotently behind Adams, staring back in fear down the alley for any sign of more troops.
That's it. Greer, Smith, get behind them.
He paused, not firing for a moment. As he watched his two men scurrying along behind the low wall to outflank their attackers, the air in front of him seemed to shimmer as if from a heat haze. When he looked again, the three attackers had disappeared without a trace. Greer and Smith reached their positions to the left of the well and were looking around in confusion. In an instant, the air buckled again, and the three enemy soldiers appeared from nowhere a few feet behind Greer and Smith.
No!
Managed Adams, before there was a barrage of fire, hitting Greer in the back, sending him sprawling. Smith looked around in utter panic, standing and running across the open street in an attempt to evade the shots.
Don't!
Yelled Adams in despair, but Smith fell before he was halfway back.
Shit!
Cursed Adams, looking wildly around for a means of escape. He spotted a flight of steps about 20 feet away, leading down to a doorway off the main street.
You two! He yelled. Down those steps, now!
He turned back to the street, firing shot after shot towards the three troops, who had taken cover near the dead body of Greer. He looked around again and cursed. Starling and Nix were still crouched in the same position, paralysed with fear. He swore again, and grabbed them both by the arms, letting his gun swing on its shoulder strap. He dragged them both out into the street, crouching as low as possible, pushing them forcibly down the steps to the open doorway. He glanced up as he went. He just caught sight of the three soldiers walking purposely towards them. The air shimmered around them for a moment, and then they had disappeared. You have been listening to The Heaven Field. For more information, downloads, and artwork, visit theheavenfield.com.